When it goes on, I'll call the meeting to order. There we go. Welcome, everyone. I will call the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee meeting to order today, February 8th, and we will start by calling the roll.
Senator Findley?
Present by video.
Senator Riley?
Present by video.
Senator Wagner?
Present by video.
Vice Chair Boquist?
Present on Teams.
Madam Chair Burdick?
Present by video. Okay, we will start today by opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 299. Chris?
Madam Chair, I believe that was the bill that was going to be heard last.
Oh, we're going to hear that last?
I'm waiting for Senator Riley to jump in.
I thought he just wanted to testify last.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. No, okay.
Go ahead and hear this bill. I want to testify last on this bill.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Jamie has a quick description of it.
Excellent.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, this is Jamie McGovern for Legislative Revenue Committee. Senate Bill 299 authorizes the formation of children's special districts and provides the district the authority to assess, levy, and collect taxes to pay the cost of the service district. This would be subject to approval by electors, so it doesn't actually create the service district with the passage of this measure. It would also be the bill describes that if there was a legitimate claim that services provided by this were subject to the Measure 5 restrictions, that the program would cease and the approach would be redirected outside of educational services. And I'm happy to go into more detail, but I can also leave the rest up to Senator Riley.
Okay, Senator Riley, I know you'll be testifying last, but is there anything you wanted to say in the introduction?
No, I think it's covered. Just that the bill makes it clear that this is not an education bill, so it's not subject to the 5% property tax. It's all included in the 10% side of the property tax. It's made clear in the bill.
Thank you. We'll start with our witness list, Representative Scouten.
Okay, good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sherry Scouten. I'm a state representative for House District 27, representing Beaverton and Southwest Portland. I'm here today to speak in favor of Senate Bill 299 from the perspective of a public health nurse specializing in maternal child health for over 30 years, a past member of the Washington County Commission for Children and Families, and as a state legislator since 2016. I have spent my entire career advocating for children and providing services that help them thrive. To help school-aged children thrive, we need to look at the social determinants of health. One of the most important determinants is developmentally stimulating environments beyond that provided in the school classroom. Too many children are left idle after school and during summer months in front of a television, a handheld device screen, or worse, when their parents are working. Unfortunately, many families cannot afford or lack the understanding of how to provide quality after school or summer activities for their children. Senate Bill 299 would provide a mechanism to create the needed funding for these activities now not available to too many children in our state. Many families do not have the resources to provide after-school enrichment activities for their children on their own. They cannot afford the park fees and recreation district fees or private organizations' charges, nor are those activities provided by our library system as widely or comprehensively as they need to be. Consequently, children of lower socioeconomic status and often children of color are disproportionately left out. Using an equity lens, SB 299 will help equalize opportunities for all of our school-age youth. Child care has also reached a crisis stage in Oregon. Too many families cannot find basic child care that they can afford, so many children who would be spending their weekday afternoons at a child care facility are not. funding after school and summer programs will improve the safety for these children. Children's parents have more than enough to worry about these days, and knowing that their children are spending their out-of-school time in safe, enriching activities in enriching environments will be a great relief to many. Adverse childhood experiences are known to have deeply negative lifetime impacts on children, requiring all sorts of expensive interventions later in life. Having the support of trusted individuals and appropriate activities in children's lives helps build resiliency to empathetically and cost-effectively reduce and combat those ACEs. Passing Bill SB 299 and putting children's services districts on the ballot will improve the lives of the children in our communities. I believe it is a choice this committee and the legislature should allow communities to make. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Scouten. Are there questions from the committee? Okay, seeing no questions, we will move to our next witness, Brenda Kinoshita. Is Brenda Kinoshita available and off of mute?
Yes. Yes, I just unmuted myself. Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. Can you hear me okay?
We can.
Great, thank you so much. My name is Brenda Kinoshita. I am the Director of Development and Communications for Clackamas Women's Services, and our organization breaks the isolation of trauma and abuse in Clackamas County for adults and children, and we have special programming for children who suffer from abuse. And we're really pleased to be able to offer our support to SB 299 because what we understand is that when children have activities available to them, supports and programming before and after school and on the weekends, it enables them to participate more fully in children's lives and also to do better in school and in many other ways. And by having trusted adults as folks who are presenting these kinds of programming, this helps build resilience in children who have suffered trauma and abuse, and they are often able to move on and heal from their trauma and live a safe and fulfilled life. And so we're here to support SB 299 and look forward to being able to participate fully.
Thank you. Are there questions from the committee? Okay, thank you very much. Our next witness is Dale Fike, and on deck will be Katie Riley. So, Mr. Fike, are you available and off of mute? Dale Fike. I see, I think Ms.
It looks like he's on mute.
Yeah, Mr. Fike, can you take yourself off of mute? Okay, we will proceed to Katie Riley and hope that Mr. Fike can solve the mute problem next. Katie?
Hi, can you hear me?
We could hear you.
Great, thank you. So Chair Burdick and members of the committee, thank you for providing the opportunity to speak in support of Senate Bill 299. My name is Katie Riley, and I live in Hillsboro, Oregon. And today I am representing Washington County Kids, which is a nonprofit coalition of organizations and individuals seeking to increase awareness of the need for sustainable funding for out-of-school time programs, which include early childhood, after-school, and summer programs. As you can see from our sign-on letter and separate letters of support, in addition to our organization, other individuals and organizations also support Senate Bill 299. Our support is based on the following facts. There is solid research that shows that kids who participate in these programs are more likely to graduate and have successful lives. Two, there are many good programs, but they are only serving a fraction of the kids who need them. Even though other organizations say they can, or maybe in the future could offer these programs, the simple fact is they simply are not doing enough right now, and there needs to be additional support. Three, even the ones that exist are usually charging some fees, and many families can't afford them. For example, in Hillsboro, the Hillsboro Park and Rec program charges $350 a month, and approximately the same amount is charged by Tualatin Hills Park and Rec, but those programs still cannot accommodate the number of kids who need them, but there are many families who could not afford them in the first place. In our recent investigation of the barriers that parents and guardians face in trying to access these programs, cost and a lack of program availability were two of the largest barriers. One of the families we talked to had three children, and they had chosen to rent to be close to an after-school program that would take their kids because both parents were working. A single mother said she didn't know what she was going to do because she needed to move away from her daughter's current program, which didn't cost as much, and she didn't think any program was available at the new location. Other families told us about problems they had picking up kids on time due to a mismatch with their work schedules and care schedules. Programs simply cannot afford to be open without more funding. Objections have been raised by the League of Oregon Cities, the Association of Oregon Counties, and some other governmental bodies for fears of tax compression. Compression, however, is simply not a problem for most of the state. It is a problem for school districts, but this bill would provide for formation of special districts outside the school districts, and therefore it would be less of a problem. Furthermore, why deprive citizens of the right to collect signatures to tax themselves to benefit children and families in their communities? Communities can choose to participate. They do not have to participate. So if a community did not want to be part of this, they would not need to. Simply like removal of sand is not necessary in many other areas of the state. This bill merely provides a mechanism for dealing with the lack of childcare by supporting existing and new programs without costing the general fund any money. In this critical time when we need to reopen the economy, childcare is key to helping women and members of communities of color get back to work. We need to support them. And it is totally voluntary. Citizens initiate and vote whether or not to establish a children's service district. If they do not want such a district, they do not need to vote for one. Cities can also opt out, but why would they, when it would benefit their community members to have childcare in their community? We ask your support to let citizens decide to prioritize kids. I am happy to answer any questions. Thank you very much.
Okay, are there questions? I see no questions. Thank you, Katie. Okay, we will go back to Dale Fike, if you're still available in the lobby. And on deck will be Mark Garst. So Dale Fike needs to be off of mute.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Dale Fike is having technical issues. I'm going to bring him to the meeting if you want to move on to the next.
Okay. We will take Mark Garst next. And on deck will be Mark, who did not give a last name from Marion County. So, Mark, whoever you are, you're on deck. And we will take Mark Garst right now. Mr. Garst.
Yes, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. My name is Mark Garst with the League of Oregon Cities. The League certainly appreciates the intent behind the bill to provide services to children, but unfortunately, we have to oppose this method of funding these programs. We know that this is a priority for Senator Riley, and we don't take this step lightly. He's, you know, definitely been persistent on this. I think that this is the fifth time that he's brought this bill forward. And unfortunately, we're still in the same spot that we were the last time. And I've submitted testimony along with a number of local partners, and I'll just summarize that testimony here, but I would definitely encourage you to take a peek at that and see what other organizations have signed up in opposition. The bill would create a new type of taxing district with the ability to levy taxes generally, and then specifically it would allow them to levy taxes with a permanent rate. These districts are somewhat unique in that generally the district provides the service, but here the district would just collect the money and then it would put out grants to different organizations that would then provide the services. The issue that we have is really related to our broken property tax system more than it is to the concept of providing help to provide to these children's programs. As the committee is well aware, Measure 5 created limits on taxes. Our property tax system is not allowed to levy more than $5 per thousand of real market value to fund education and more than $10 per thousand of real market value to fund all other government services. Among other changes, Measure 50 established permanent rates for districts, and it allowed the districts to go out to voters to ask for operating levies and also capital improvement bonds. When taxes are calculated, we multiply the assessed value of the property times the rates of all the districts where the property is located, and then we test what that amount is against those Measure 5 limits of $5 and $10 per thousand of real market value. If taxes are reduced, then that's known as compression, and compression proportionally happens first on all of the operating levies, and then it happens to the permanent rates. And capital improvement bonds are outside of compression. They don't get compressed. So in 2018-19, we lost $129 million statewide to compression, taxes that could have otherwise been levied but were reduced because of these rates. And about over 32 million of this was city revenue that would have otherwise come into cities, and a little less than 19 million of it was county revenue. So it's true that schools are more heavily compressed, but certainly they're not alone. The system creates competition among districts. So what ends up happening is that if you have a new district like this Children's Service District, they would come in, they would levy a rate, and then it would end up, potentially reducing revenues to all of the other districts in that community. And so again, local option levies will get reduced first, right? And this bill allows the Children's Service District to levy permanent rate taxes. And so that means that if you had, for instance, a library district that had gone out to voters, they had said, we want to expand our library hours and we're going to levy X amount of dollars. Well, they would get the operating levies would get compressed first. And so that would be less money that would go to that district. And then if you compress down all of the operating levies down to zero, then you start to get into permanent rates and it could start to hit the permanent rates of other districts. Again, so Senate Bill 299 creates a new type of district with the ability to set a permanent rate. Our concerns are not related to funding these children's services. Our concerns are really related to using this broken property tax system in order to get that revenue and in effect reducing revenue for other districts. Education is compressed separately, as has been noted, and this bill attempts to kind of avoid creating more compression in the education side by saying that if something is later determined to be an education-related activity, then the districts will stop doing it. This is going to be tough. I mean, a lot of these services sound to me like they're going to be education-related. If you look at the supporters, the testimonies that's been submitted, there are programs that folks are talking about for literacy, for math, for health education, for learning generally. And so I think that there's a good chance that those would be actually categorized under the $5 limit. And then, so what happens if we find out later that some of these activities are in that limit? Well, it's messy. I don't know exactly how it would work out, and I would certainly defer to LC and LRO. But I think that generally what would happen is that a taxpayer might go to tax court and say that their taxes were too high because this was improperly categorized. And then you would go through the process of compressing both the Children's Service District levy, whatever portion was used for education activities, and the school district levy, and that whatever amount taxpayers had effectively overpaid on that $5 limit would need to be refunded to taxpayers out of both the Children's Service money and out of the school district money. Again, it's messy, and I will defer to, you know, legislative counsel. This tries to create a new method. It says that there can be, you know, some kind of generic appeal. It's not clear where that would be to and how that would work exactly. Your cities are struggling right now. You know, now's not the time to take away local revenue. We're dealing with this property tax system, which has been a longstanding problem, and I'm hopeful that we're going to have more conversations around property tax reform later in this session. But in addition to that, we're losing a ton of money on Measure 110. It's a 72% reduction in the money that we would have otherwise seen through marijuana. We're looking at $45.8 million loss, 21 to 23, between cities and counties. We've got people driving less. We're all here online right now. We're not driving, and that reduces our gas tax revenue. People aren't going out to hotels right now. That reduces our lodging tax revenue. And there are a number of proposals right now through the OLCC that would reduce our liquor revenues. They need a new warehouse. They're talking about increasing agent compensation. So now is really not the time to do something that risks local revenues. And, you know, we would be happy to have a conversation about how it is that we might fund, you know, these services outside of the property tax system. Certainly, I hear, you know, if low-income kids are not getting help to pay park fees for programs, maybe that's something that we should look at in particular. I know that some park programs, they have sliding scales, and they definitely, you know, they're very sensitive to those concerns. So I imagine that we'll hear later that there are, you know, some programs out there for that type of thing. But really, the property tax system is not the way to fund these services right now. And I really appreciate your time. I won't go on any longer, but I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Senator Finley has a question.
Madam Chair, it's not particularly a question as much as Mr. Garst has referred to submitted materials. I've checked and I cannot find any submitted materials on the record anyplace. I mean, a prior speaker said they provided written materials. I can't find any written materials anyplace. So I guess it's a question to staff is, are they posted? Where are they posted and when will they be posted? So.
Chair Burdick, I think that they're under the bill, actually. So if you click on the bill number and then you go under testimony, I think you might be able to find them there. That's where I can see it, Senator Finley.
Thank you.
Okay, other questions from the committee? Thank you. Do we have, let's see, where do we stand with Dale Fike? Staff?
Dale Fike should be present on the telephone, and he just needs to hit star 6 to unmute.
Okay. Did you hear that, Mr. Fike?
Yes.
All right. Welcome to the committee.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Thank you. Chair Jenny Burdick and members of the committee. I'm Dale Fike, chair and spokesperson for Washington County Citizen Action Network. How could I not sign on to support Senate Bill 299? Or how could you, Senator Lynn Finley, who just spoke, not support it? Especially when the need is great and with the opportunity to do something constructive without asking for state funds. I address you, Senator Finley, because you are from Vail and I am from LaGrande. While attending East Oregon College from 1962 to 1966, I played baseball with a player from Vail. He and I talked about being lucky to have had after-school activities, baseball, that led us to play Eastern Oregon College varsity baseball for 4 years. I submitted written testimony to you, Chair Burdick, and other committee members that explains how after-school activities and children's activities changed my life and led me to become a teacher for 34 years working with hard to teach disadvantaged students. The person that spoke just before me talked about compression. I'd please analyze the issues as addressed by Senator Chuck Riley. It's complicated, but I don't think it's quite as complicated as the previous person just said. Out-of-school time programs have very lasting, lifetime positive consequences. Please support Senate Bill 299 to give kids like me and kids that I have taught the service they need to survive and hopefully thrive. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there questions from the committee? I see no questions, so we will move on to our next witness, Mark from Marion County.
Good afternoon, Chair Burdick. Can you hear me?
I can't. Mark Landauer, why didn't you put your last name on there?
Well, Chair Burdick, apparently this new system is a little bit too complicated for me to handle, so I sincerely apologize to you and the rest of the committee. My apologies, and thank you for allowing me to be here today. I'll do better next time, I hope, anyway. Thank you, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. My name is Mark Landauer. I'm here on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon. Our association represents approximately 950 special districts across the state of Oregon. They provide a variety of services, as has been mentioned before. We have approximately, actually, 34 types of special districts in the state of Oregon. At the outset, I want to, first of all, compliment Senator Riley. His persistence on this issue cannot be compared. It's certainly been a passionate issue for him and for his lovely wife. I'd like to compliment them. And I want to make it very clear that we're not opposed to what the senator is trying to accomplish. I think we can all agree that providing services to our children, for those who are less able to afford programs out there, is a very noble goal. And I'm not here to oppose in any way, shape, or form the goal of this bill. I am, however, here to oppose the execution of how this bill attempts to do that. As Mr. Garce pointed out, and I'll attempt to be much shorter than him because he really did cover this topic well, I do think that at the final analysis of this bill is really an indictment of our current property tax system that creates this challenge. We all know that local governments are under extreme stress as a result of ballot measures 5 and 50. And as time goes on, those challenges just become more daunting. Obviously, we've expressed concerns about duplications of service, compression. It further complicates our very complicated property tax system, but I'd like to just make two quick additional points beyond what Mr. Garst shared with you. In particular, I'd like to point out Section 2, Sub 2B of the bill, which can be found on page 2 between lines 15 and 21 of the bill. This language will allow any person, whether or not they have standing, whether or not it necessarily has merit, to file an action that thereby paralyzes the district from expending any money whatsoever. As a matter of fact, if you read that language, the petition or the claim asserting that the funding is being spent improperly doesn't have to even be validated. Simply, a person can file a claim. And therefore, the district would be prohibited from expending those funds. And again, I would remind the committee that this person who may file a claim doesn't have to reside within that particular taxing jurisdiction. It can come from anywhere. So I would suggest that this language in this particular section needs a little bit of additional work. I'd also point out in Section 5, typically when you form a special district, when that special district is formed, a permanent rate is created. This bill does not do that. As a matter of fact, this bill allows the children's district to essentially determine how much money they need on an annual basis and therefore seek that funding. This will create additional problems for assessors, so on and so forth. I won't go into great detail, but I think that both these two sections that I pointed out need some serious additional work in order for them to be operable. So, Madam Chair, we have opposed this bill in the past. We continue to. We're certainly not opposed to the goal that, again, as I mentioned, is noble, but we remain concerned that this bill will create a lot of problems. And as a result, I'll conclude my testimony and be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Okay, questions from the committee. Senator Wagner.
Good. Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe with your indulgence, and I don't know if we have Mr. Garst still on here too. A bit of a comment and then maybe just a couple questions if I could. My comment is just because it's hard or that it's been tried a few times before doesn't mean that it's not the right thing to do. And in some of the testimony I heard from the local government lobbyists, the things I didn't hear about were kids, equity, and need. I heard about it being complicated. I heard about it being confusing. Well, those are things I think we can figure out a way to work together on coming up with a solution. I've only had the opportunity to vote on the floor one time on this legislation. I look forward to hopefully getting a chance to vote on it again. When it comes to fixing Measure 5 or Measure 50, I think you've got a lot of folks that would like to participate in that, but it doesn't strip away the need that we have a lot of kids across this state right now that are really, really suffering. I guess my question would be, maybe for Mr. Landauer, as I look at the statute as it's, or actually in the bill that kind of defines the special districts with cemeteries and vectors and weather modifications and geothermal heating, why are these things that are needed not under a local government structure that used to exist, under cities or counties? Why were those initially constructed, and why wouldn't kids be just as important as those other activities?
Well, Chair Burdick and Senator Wagner, if I gave you the impression that we're not sensitive to the needs of children, I certainly did not intend to share that characterization at all with you. As a matter of fact, I completely agree with your premise that children need additional services. I think that there's nobody who would disagree with that statement, and I hope that I didn't give you that impression at the outset. So if I did, forgive me. And I would agree with your statements that we do need to invest more in children. So to your question, yes, there are 34 different types of districts, and you only see actually 28 that exist right now. There are a few others that are interspersed throughout the statute. And really the genesis of most of these districts has been people forming and petitioning their county to go and create these types of districts because the services that they provide are not either provided by the county or city in which they live, okay? So oftentimes this is a method by which you can extend a type of service to the citizens if they are not being provided by an existing jurisdiction. So Senator, I agree with you that it is typical for people to organize and form these districts. And I don't necessarily oppose the notion of the folks petitioning their local county and trying to do so. As a matter of fact, if I recall correctly, it was just last year that Senator Riley and Mrs. Riley were before the Washington County Board of Commissioners seeking their approval of forwarding a ballot to the citizens of Washington County. That county commission denied that request. And as a result, here we are at the state legislature trying to create the formation of a children's special district. And again, as I mentioned, we're concerned as a result of the property tax impacts rather than trying to provide additional services to children. I hope that answered your question, Senator. If it didn't, I'd be more than happy to try another swing at it.
You want to follow up, Senator
Wagner? Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And Mark, no, you didn't leave the impression at all that little special districts or counties or cities don't care for kids. I just didn't hear it in some of the presentation that was actually being presented. Or I know that it's also difficult, especially under Measure 5 and Measure 50, to have weighing factors when we have these constitutional limitations. I have a lot of respect for that. At the same token, whether or not it's petitioning a particular local government like a county in favor of kids versus something that's regional. So Metro, for example, we all know Metro of recent now is in the housing business. Dan Saltzman here has submitted a letter about the city of Portland leveraging their ability to be able to help kids. I mean, I think when it comes to kids, I think everybody should be pulling in the same direction. And if it means that similar to Parks and Rec District or a weather modification district, giving local people the ability to have that vote, I trust in the voters to know whether or not if there's an issue around compression, if they're worried that it's going to take tax revenue away from the local Parks and Rec District or away from the city or roads or whatever the other arguments that were about marijuana money or all of that. I would just say I trust in the voters to be able to make that determination. So I'm very much persuaded. I hope that the technical pieces that you have that have raised around the confusion that's embedded in some of that. I have a feeling Senator Riley will probably give me a little bit of an education, but anyway, I appreciate your testimony. I'm just standing with Chuck on this one.
Senator Finley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is probably a quest for LRO or someone, but it's my understanding that any county can establish a special district now at any time by vote of the people. They are not prohibited from doing that. So if a county wanted to do that, all you have to do is put it to the vote of the people and poof, you have a special district. I mean, I've seen it done repeatedly with education service districts, with library districts, with parks and rec districts. They could do it very easily for this. So why do we need state to say we've done it, but when the counties currently have that authority to do so. So we're not establishing something that they don't already have. They already have that ability to go create that. Is that not true? I see Senator Riley shaking his head. Yes, I believe I'm correct, but I don't know that. So, thank you.
So if I may answer that, the answer is yes, they can. They can certainly do that. Unfortunately, they don't. That's the reason we're here. And you see that all the elected officials, all the county and city, we have a lot of elected officials here who are opposed to it. We don't have any citizens who showed up to oppose it. And I think that's important.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Any more questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we will have Simon Fulford, and on deck, we'll have Susan Bender Phelps. So, Simon.
Good afternoon, Chair Burdick and members of the committee. This is Simon Fulford. Just want a quick nod that you can hear me.
Yep, good. We can hear you.
Thank you very much. My name is Simon Fulford. I'm the Executive Director of Parrot Creek Child and Family Services, a child and family serving nonprofit based in Clackamas County, but also serving youth from across the state. We provide services to children and families, predominantly at the acute end of our child welfare systems. I'm also on the steering committee of the Safe Kids Coalition in Clackamas County, as well as a number of other kind of community connections. Really, I'm just going to say, coming to speak to you today in full support of Senate Bill 299 for the Children's Service Districts. I echo a great number of the comments made in support of this by others that have testified before you. And just as a working example in Clackamas County, we put forward, we're a coalition of community nonprofits put forward onto the ballot a children's safety levy, which unfortunately did not pass. And a children's service district would have really provided an actually much better mechanism to go to the community and to garner that level of support from the voter to fully explain how this would work. I wanted to echo a few comments that there is clearly not enough funding going through to the critically needed services for children. And a vehicle to get much needed funding directly into communities, and if administered properly, contracted with community nonprofits who are known to be the most effective and efficient mechanisms for serving children in our communities. And the Children's Service District is a perfect tool to get that to happen. So again, just echoing support for Senate Bill 299. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Seeing none, Susan Bender Phelps.
Here I am, Susan Bender Phelps. You can hear me, yes?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Lovely. Good afternoon, Chair Burdick and members of the committee. I'm Susan Bender Phelps, and I am currently president of Friends of Washington County Kids. I'm also a past member of the Washington County Commission on Children and Families, where much of our funding was dependent upon the state legislative budget. And during the 5 years that I served, we were put through the motions of having to consistently cut funding to children's services. And it became so sad, so many programs were cut. Fast forward, I'm also a former nonprofit executive who used to deliver mentoring programs to at-risk kids. I'm a business owner. And when my children were young, I was a parent who needed those out-of-school time programs so that I could earn a living and support my family. We are here today because elected officials oppose SB 299. I am a voter. I am not an elected official. I am a parent. I am a grandparent. And without being able to get our county to provide what our kids need, we came to Chuck Riley and said, can you help us create a way that we can have locally sourced sustainable funding so that parents who need to work can have their children in safe, affordable programs. And this is why we're here today. The reason I am president of Friends of Washington County Kids is because if an organization wants to be able to bring locally sourced funding, we have to jump through an awful lot of hoops to get it on the ballot. This gives us a tool to work with our county officials or anywhere in Oregon for parents and organizations that provide these services to have a mechanism to create the sustainable support that children and families need. Now, you've heard the research. We know these programs are valuable. Even those who oppose this particular mechanism have told you they agree that our mission to create services for children is important. But rather than fix the broken property tax system, they would like you to use the broken system as a reason not to pass this bill, not to give us a mechanism to solve a problem that we will desperately need to solve in a much bigger way because of COVID. Women have been hit by this far more than men. They are at home, they are running businesses, they are working from home while having their kids in school online, and it's not working. A lot of the organizations that have been hit with budget cuts are not going to be able to provide childcare before and after school, early learning programs at the same level. Even this solution isn't going to be perfect because it's going to take time once you pass it for each community to do the work that they need to do to get these districts in place if they want to do them, if voters support it. And it will also give them a tool to help them leverage their county officials to provide another option if this is such a terrible one for them. I don't think that it is. But if they really believe that it's a bad option, give us the ability to create them without having to get their permission and let the voters be heard. If they don't want to do a special district, let them then come to the table and help us find another way. If we're going to get Oregon's economy back online, if we're going to support our children so that they become the future of our state, if we're going to make it easier for parents to work outside the home, this is a place where you can start, where you can make it possible. And there's no impact to the state budget. This is giving local communities the opportunity to solve a problem that, whether or not you're a parent or an employer, this problem is going to impact your ability to get back online once we are no longer working from home, once we can reopen our businesses. So we need to help our children, we need to help our families who are the workforce of Oregon, and we need to help our employers who need these workers in order to bring Oregon back to where it needs to be. Because all the losses that were described in revenue are because of COVID. And if we're ready, when we can get back to work, to support families and kids, we can make it happen. And your vote yes today can put us on that road. Thank you. I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you. Are there questions from the committee? Thank you. And our last witness will be Senator Riley.
Thank you, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. So I just wanted to touch a few points that have been
introduce yourself by name.
Thank you. my name is Chuck Riley. I'm senator from Senate District 15, which is Hillsborough, Cornelius, Forest Grove, North Plains, and a lot of farms. So just to touch on a few things that we've heard. And I want to reiterate what I said to Senator Finley earlier. You'll notice that we had no citizens who weren't elected county or city officials or their representatives testify against this. And there's a reason for that. This is a very necessary, very needed service. It's true that there are services provided all across the state. But unfortunately, they cost money that people can't afford. In my district, there are services or close to my district, for instance, Tualatin Hills Parks and Recs District, a great organization. They're really good at what they do. Unfortunately, they're very expensive. They get tax money, and on top of that, they have to charge, and they charge approximately $350 per kid per month. That's fine for Intel engineers. It's not fine for the person who has to work at McDonald's. It's not fine for the person who is out on the job at minimum wage with three kids. This is who we want to help. We want to help those people who can't afford it. And even the folks who can afford it, honestly, there are waiting lists for every activity that's provided. There are long waiting lists. Not everybody has grandparents who are able to wait up in the morning and when the list opens up and get on it and get their grandkids on the list. This is a big problem. We need more spaces, and we need them to be affordable for those people who need them. We talk a lot about equality these days and equity. And unfortunately, the system we have currently for children's service district services, programs for out of school time, are not equitable. They're expensive. Some districts have sliding scales, they've said. Well, that's great. Unfortunately, for instance, Tualatin Hills Parks and Dextries, they offer some kids a break. They'll give them a 1 month per year break on their service fees. You know, it's just not equitable. And we need it. We need those kids who are most at risk to have these services, and that's where we need to go. I understand that the counties and the cities are concerned, but mostly they're concerned about competition. They're not really as concerned about compression as they make out. If you look at, I had LRO do a study a couple of years ago on compression across the state. And it turns out that most counties and cities and special districts are not in compression right now. Why is that? It's because houses are more expensive than the taxes they have to pay. That's the reason that we don't have as much compression. If the housing in our state decreases in value more than 3% a year, then we might go into compression a bit more, but we're not about to do that. So that's really all I have. I'm happy to answer questions for anybody.
Okay, are there questions? I see no questions, so thank you very much. And we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 299.
Senator Finley had a hand up.
Senator Finley, I'm sorry I missed you. Go ahead.
No problem. Thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to ask, but I could do it later. But I firmly believe in children's programs. So the current programs that exist in parks and rec districts and library districts and other for children, would those districts be able to go to a children's district and secure their funding from them as well, or would it be two stovepipes?
So let me answer that question. The answer is yes. We've already talked, for instance, with Tualatin Hills Parks and Recs, which is why this 2 years ago, the special districts weren't opposed. And that's because Tualatin Hills Parks and Recs District went to them and said, hey, don't oppose this. I don't know what happened this year, but special districts have suddenly become opposed again. But the answer is yes. This would be funding for programs that want to serve the kids in the community but don't have the funds to do it. We would take the district would take RFPs from existing service providers and see if they look like they would serve the community that needs to be provided. And generally this will be existing services like parks and recs and like libraries and anything like any of those existing services which have the ability to provide these services but don't have the money.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, seeing any more questions? I do not see any, so we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 299 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 119. Chris.
Madam Chair, I think Kyle Easton should be on the call and is handling, kind of stalling for a second to see.
Yeah. Okay, Kyle. I always always go through Chris and have him direct it in the appropriate place. So, Kyle, welcome.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Kyle Easton, Legislative Revenue Office. And yes, Senate Bill 119 is a bill that was introduced at the request of the Department of Revenue, and it's relating to an existing tax subtraction that's on the books here in Oregon related to artists that are making charitable contributions of an art object. So right now, this is an existing tax subtraction, and the change in Senate Bill 119 has to do with the reporting requirements. So when an artist makes one of these charitable contributions of their artwork, under current law right now, they are required to include with their tax return that they file an appraisal report showing the value of the art that they donated. The change in Senate Bill 119 would just eliminate the requirement to submit with their return that appraisal report, though the artist would still be required to obtain that report and keep it for their own records.
Okay, and the purpose of this is, we'll take our next witness and I'll save my question. So we have Marjorie Taylor from the Oregon Department of Revenue. Marjorie, can you hear us?
Yes, certainly. Thank you, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Marjorie Taylor, the Legislative Director for the Department of Revenue. As Kyle explained, Senate Bill 119 is one of our agency bills, and Oregon artists may claim that tax deduction when they donate an artwork to a charitable cause. For that artist to claim the tax deduction, they must first obtain that written appraisal of the artwork, and current law requires that the artist submit that appraisal with their personal income tax return. About 90% of our taxpayers are filing electronically. So what Senate Bill 119 does is it removes the requirement that artists who claim this deduction submit their appraisal with their personal income tax return. However, it retains the requirement that the artist actually obtain the appraisal for the artwork and requires the artist to hold that appraisal in their records so that they can submit it to the Department of Revenue as requested. So we're just trying to streamline the process for those taxpayers who wish to donate their art for charitable causes and that they don't actually have to file that written appraisal with their tax return, but just keep it on record in the event that we need that. I'd be happy to answer your questions.
Okay, so this would apply whether they file electronically or with the traditional paper form?
Madam Chair, that's correct. So again, we've identified that about 90% of our taxpayers are filing electronically, and we find that it's easier for most of them to just retain the appraisal in their own personal records and that we can request it if we need it.
Okay, Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Boquist here. Is there in the experience of the Department of Revenue, is there a threshold level of concern? I mean, obviously if it's reasonable, but I don't know how you determine is reasonable. So, I mean, how do you figure out that somebody misvalued something? Is there a marker or something you use, or is it an algorithm put in the computer that says if it's above X that somebody looks at it?
Madam Chair and Senator Boquist, I'm not sure, and I'd be happy to get back to you with the answer to that question about a threshold. However, the appraisal would have to be a professional appraisal, and you know, again, we're looking at the donation to a charitable cause. So it's probably not finger painting, as I suggested to some of our staff in the Department of Revenue, but I'd be certainly happy to get the response for you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Riley, do you still have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just a comment, I guess. I submit a lot of artist things, art paintings, jewelry, photographs and I give them to charity, and I have never yet filed a claim to take that off my taxes, because so far nothing's been expensive enough for me to afford to have it appraised. You answered my question actually before I asked it, which was who would do the appraisal, and you said it had to be a professional appraiser. So it has to be someone who's licensed or certified or
Madam Chair and Senator Riley, I think that was a question about who's doing the appraisal. And again, it's a professional appraisal that provides a credible value for the artwork that's donated, and that the artist would have to retain that on record so that as the department might inquire as to the value, we could certainly look at that professional appraisal.
Okay, I see no further questions, so I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 119 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 120. Chris.
Madam Chair, this is another one that Kyle is handling. It's another DOR bill.
Hello, Kyle, take it away.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee. So Senate Bill 120, as Chris just mentioned, is a bill introduced at the request of the Department of Revenue. In this case, it's relating to the modification of a period in which certain tax refund interest begins accruing. And it would be effective for refunds owing as of January 1st, 2018. So there is some information in the background of the SMS that explains a little bit why the modification would take effect as of January 1st, 2018, but you also have the Department of Revenue here that has an example as well to kind of display what the amount of interest we're talking about, because this isn't just a blanket change. It is, it affects certain but not all of how interest is calculated.
Okay, Marjorie, do you want to be a panel with XN Culver or?
Madam Chair, that would be great. Thank you very much.
Okay. Exxon Culver, why don't you enter the room and then both of you identify yourself and then identify yourself again when you speak so everybody can see your pictures up there.
Madam Chair, I'm Marjorie Taylor from the Department of Revenue.
And I am Exxon Culver with the Oregon Department of Revenue.
Okay, thank you. Welcome. Go ahead, Marjorie.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Marjorie Taylor, Legislative Director for the Department of Revenue. As Kyle indicated, Senate Bill 120 is also part of our agency package of bills this session. And the Oregon Department of Revenue pays interest on overpayments of taxes paid. However, Oregon law specifies how that interest is calculated and how it accrues. In 2017, in Senate Bill 33, there was a change to the way the interest was calculated from monthly to daily. However, an inadvertent change also changed when the interest would start to accrue. So provisions of Senate Bill 120 clarify that interest begins to accrue on overpayments on the later of 45 days after the due date or 45 days after the date the tax was paid. I'd like to highlight that provisions of this measure, Senate Bill 120, were included in Senate Bill 1531 during the 2020 session, and they're currently included in House Bill 2456, which has also had a hearing in front of the House Revenue Committee. And as we've identified, Exxon Culver is here with me to help identify some other provisions of this measure. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome, Exxon. Then we'll hold questions till after you're done.
Thank you, Chair Burdick. Members of the committee, Exxon Culver with the Oregon Department of Revenue. Marjorie did a really good job describing what the bill is doing. I would just point out that the current law has, as it was changed in 2017, it added an errant word on, and that now requires that refund interest be paid for taxpayers who pay after the due date, the refund interest begins to accrue the same day the payment is made. Whereas a taxpayer who pays before the due date, the refund interest does not begin to accrue until 45 days after the due date. So this change would correct that discrepancy between how taxpayers are treated depending on when they make that payment. If they pay before, they would get the same interest calculation as someone who pays after, and it would begin, again, those 45 days after the due date or after the payment, whichever is later. And so this change in Senate Bill 120 takes us back to the pre-2018 law. We're happy to answer questions.
Okay, questions from the committee. I see no questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we have no other witnesses signed up and no other bills in front of us, so I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 120. Is there any other business we need to take care of, Chris?
No, Madam Chair, you've gone through your agenda.
Okie dokie, so we are adjourned. Thank you, committee.